chapter 13, let's start reading here in verse 54. He got his own country. He taught them in their synagogue so that they were astonished. Where did this man get this wisdom and these mighty works? Is this not the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary? And his brothers James, Joe, Simon, and Judas? His sisters, are they not all with us? Where then did this man get all these things? So they were offended at him. But Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor, except in his own country, in his own house. July the 5th of 2014, Hueytown, Alabama, where we were living at the time, celebrated Jameson Winston Day. Now, some of you probably have heard of Jameson Winston's name. Jameson Winston played quarterback at Hueytown High School. After high school, he went to Florida State University. And in 2013, he was named the Heisman Trophy winner of that year. 2014, he led Florida State to the national championship, and he was also named most valuable player of that game. In 2015, he was the number one draft choice of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He played there for some time. I think now he plays for the Saints. Hueytown, Alabama was proud of James and Winston. They were proud of their hometown son. If you go into Lawrenceburg from Highway 64 from the east, and as you get closer to the town, you'll see a sign that says, hometown of Fred Dalton Thompson. Remember him? Senator, actor. Lawrenceburg, Tennessee is proud of their hometown son. If you travel to Tupelo, Mississippi from the north on Highway 45, as you begin to enter that town, there's a sign that says, hometown, or I think it's a birthplace probably, birthplace of Elvis Presley. Tupelo, Mississippi is proud of their hometown son. Jesus has went back home here. He's went back home. There's no fanfare when he enters the city. There's no key to the city. There's no parade. He just enters the synagogue and he begins to teach. And through his teaching, the people are astonished. They could not believe what he was saying. In fact, in some translations, it says they were amazed. Where did this guy learn these things at? How was he able to do the things he's been doing? They were just astonished by Jesus Christ from Nazareth. He wasn't supposed to do those things. He wasn't supposed to say these things. And the text says that they were offended at him. And some translations said they took offense. The Greek word for that is scandalized. They were scandalized. There's a big scandal by Christ coming home and speaking in the synagogue of his hometown. They were not going to erect any signs out front of that town. They were not going to have any praise for him. Instead, it was a scandal. You see, to us, Jesus is the Lord of Lords, the King of Kings. He's the Son of God. He's the Alpha Omega. But when he went back home to Nazareth, he was nothing more than the carpenter's son. The carpenter's son. Have you ever noticed how very little information we have about Christ's early life? Very little information. You know, when we open the books of Mark and John, you know, we don't find no babe wrapped in swaddling clothes laid in the manger, do we? We don't read about any shepherds, you know, out in the fields with their flocks. We don't read of any angels singing praises to God. We don't read any of that, do we? Really, the only thing we know about the birth and the early life of Jesus Christ comes from Matthew and from Luke. And let's face it, they say very little about it, don't they? Oh, they give us some information perhaps about his birth, about what happened, about the visit of the Magi later on. But when it comes to Christ, you know, you might say year 1 to 30 or whatever, we don't know much of that about it, do we? In fact, Luke really kind of wraps it up, what we know about Christ's early life. Over in Luke chapter 2, verse 52, he only says, and Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. So we know very little. But I think we know more than we might think we know because of what's said here in this text. For in the text it says what? Jesus was the carpenter's son. You know, that word carpenter is interesting because it comes from a word that is simply tecton. Any technicians here? Anybody a technician? Well, if you're a technician, you are a tecton. That's what you are. Now, the thing about it that's interesting about that word is the tecton, though it's translated as technician today, is really someone who can build anything. He's someone who works with his hands. He could build cabinets. He could build bridges. He could build buildings. He could build chairs. You know, whatever you could work with your hands, that's a tecton. And it says of Jesus Christ that he is a tecton. Not only is he a tecton, he's the son of a tecton, the son of a carpenter. There's an old Jewish proverb that goes something like this. If you do not teach your son how to work, you teach him how to be a thief. Joseph, the carpenter, taught his son how to be a carpenter. And so he worked alongside his father for many years. He probably built houses. He might have built furniture. He might have built bridges. He might have built things that those people at that synagogue that day had in their house built by Jesus. Can you imagine that? They might have had a chair or a table. And so when he comes home, and he goes into that synagogue, and he begins to say the things that he says, and he does the things that he does, they say, wait a minute, that's the carpenter's son, ain't it? That's the carpenter's son. You know, out of all the families of the world, Jesus could have been born into to help him in his ministry. Why a family of carpenters? You know, he's going to be a priest, isn't he? He's our ultimate high priest. Why not have him born to the family of a priest so he can learn all about the priesthood? Wouldn't that be great to help him in his ministry then when he comes, at that time? We know that he's to be our king, and he is our king. Why not have him born in a palace somewhere where he learns what it's like to be royalty and have servants and such like? He's the great physician, isn't he? Why not have him be born into a family of doctors, you know? He can learn all about what it means to be a physician that might help him later on as he begins his ministry. But out of all the various occupations and families that Jesus could have been born into, he's born into the family of carpenters. Now why? Well, I want to suggest this evening that why he was born to the family of carpenters is that it prepared him for when it came time for his ministry to start. So let's talk about Jesus, the carpenter's son, this evening as we consider things about what we learn about Jesus from the fact that he was born to a family of carpenters. I think the first thing that helped Jesus when he started his ministry, having been born into the family of carpenters, is the fact that he could communicate. He learned communication skills. He was born in a barn, raised in a ghetto, a carpenter by trade, but Jesus Christ is the most quoted individual this world's ever seen. Now, let me ask you this. Where did he learn those communication skills? Where did he learn to talk the way he talked? He didn't sit at the feet of Gamaliel, did he? He didn't go to no rabbinical schools, did he? I think he learned to talk the way he talked is from all those years in a carpenter shop around average, ordinary, common folk. I think that helped him. You see, when Jesus went out to preach, teach, he spoke their language. He spoke in a way that people could understand him. He never spoke over somebody's head. Oh, it's been many years ago now. I went to, when we were living in Florence, went to UNA. William F. Buckley Jr. Remember him? Remember how he talked? William F. Buckley Jr. was speaking at UNA, so I went to hear him. Now, I'd heard him and seen him on TV many, many times. He spoke very quietly, very low, but he spoke in such as intellectual speak. Man, he'd say all these different words and this stuff, and he'd talk about all this stuff. You know, I didn't understand a third that he said. You know, you ever reading the bills that come down through Congress? If you've read those bills, can you understand them? Well, unless you're a politician, you probably can't. You see, it's in a language that's different than our language. And so William F. Buckley and people like him, they speak in this intellectual talk that only intellectuals can understand. Jesus was not amongst intellectuals. He's amongst common people. And so he spoke in a way that they could understand. And so when he'd go to speak to farmers, what would he talk about? He'd talk about farming, wouldn't he? And when he's going to talk to fishermen, what did he talk about? He'd talk about fishing. And when he would talk to other folks, he'd talk about things that they could understand. He'd use illustrations. He talked about a door, a gate, a wedding party, things like that that they were familiar with. And could say, yeah, I know what that means. And so he again spoke in their language. He spoke through parables. You know, Christ was not the first person to ever speak in parables. We have parables in the Old Testament. But he spoke in parables that people might understand. Again, what was he talking about? In fact, on one occasion, the disciples come to him and ask, you know, Lord, why do you speak in parables? And Jesus' answer was, because I want people to understand what I'm saying. That's why. And so sometimes he would speak in parables. Sometimes Christ would speak through illustrations. You know, he'd talk about a beam in a person's eye. You're sitting there listening to Christ talk about a beam. You got a 2x4 sticking out of somebody's eye, you know. You get that vivid illustration in your head. He talked about houses built on rocks and sands. He talks about a camel trying to get through the eye of a needle. I think sometimes Christ was humorous in what he said. But people understood what he meant. And then sometimes Christ spoke through example. Through example. I'm not big on reading instructions. Christmas Eve was the most challenging time for me when we had small children. And you know what I mean, because you're putting things together. And I always had things left over. I love YouTube tutorials. You know, you go pull up YouTube and you watch somebody do it. I can do that. And you go out and do it. You know, Christ taught that way sometimes. He taught by just illustrating his lesson through things that he would do. And so over in John chapter 13, at what we call the Last Supper, what did he do? After supper was over, he got up and he washed their feet. He took a pan of water and a towel and began washing their apostles' old smelly feet. By that example he was doing was teaching them a lesson about servitude. And there's other cases where Christ would illustrate that. He'd take a child on one occasion, put him on his lap, and say, you've got to be like this child to be in the kingdom of heaven. And so often, Jesus would speak in ways, again, people could understand him. And in Mark chapter 12, verse 37, it says the common people heard him gladly. Now, why were they glad to hear Jesus? Because they could understand him. That's a challenge for anybody who ever gets in a pulpit. Speak in a way people can understand you. What good is it if you stand up here and you may be speaking the truth, but you say words and use illustration, and no one has any clue what you're talking about? A few years ago, I heard about a gospel preacher. I think he was out on the West Coast somewhere. His sermon on Sunday morning was to get up and have his audience turn to Acts chapter 2. They all turned to Acts chapter 2. And then he proceeded to read Acts chapter 2 in Greek. In Greek. Anybody here know Greek? I know George Laris, he was a friend of mine in high school. He was Greek. Family ran the restaurant there in town. That's the only Greek I know. Now, some of you will get that on the way home, by the way. That's the only Greek I know. That's impressive, isn't it? To read out of Greek. I had trouble enough reading out of English. But what good did that do? Probably not much good. When your audience cannot understand what you're saying, it doesn't do much good. Jesus spoke in a way that people could understand him. And so they could gladly receive then what he had to say. Where did he learn that at? I think he learned that all those years in a carpenter shop working around common, ordinary, everyday people. That's where he learned it at. There's another thing that I think that he learned in a carpenter shop, and that's compassion. Compassion. I like English mythology. Now, when we think of mythology, we normally think of Greek mythology or Roman mythology, you know, all the gods, this and another, you know. But English mythology is interesting because English mythology centers upon the stories of King Arthur. King Arthur, Camelot, you know, the round table. That's English mythology. Now, if you know anything about English mythology, if you know your Arthur legends, when Arthur was born to Uther Pendragon, who was his father, who was the king, the magician Merlin stole the baby and took him to the home of Ector and Kay, his son. And that's where Arthur was to be raised. Now, why did he take him away from his father? Why did he take him away from the palace? Why did he put him in the family of Ector and his son Kay? You know why? Because Merlin knew that he wasn't going to learn how to have compassion on the people he will one day rule if all he does is lives in a palace and has servants at his beck and call? That's why. Christ had compassion on folks, didn't he? I think it's 10, 11 times in the Gospels we read of Jesus being moved with compassion. Compassion is simply defined as the yearning of the innermost nature with pity and sympathy. He had compassion on the leper in Mark chapter 1. He had compassion on the multitude in Mark chapter 8. He had compassion on a widow who had just lost her son in Luke chapter 7. And over and over and over again, we see Jesus move with compassion for people that he didn't know personally, but people he could identify with because he was one of them. And had seen those people all those years in a carpenter's shop. You know, we tend to have compassion on people we know good, don't we? You know, people you've been around, people you might know, you've been in their home even, you tend to have more compassion towards those people than you might have on somebody who's a stranger. Jesus had compassion on the common folk because that's who he was raised around. So 2005, Martha and I, we went to China and to get Molly. And we landed in Beijing, and we're there in Beijing for 3 days. And so one day, they took us to Tiananmen Square. Maybe somebody have heard of that, Tiananmen Square. Tiananmen Square is about two square blocks of just concrete. That's Tiananmen Square. And it sits right before the Forbidden City. That's where we're heading, Forbidden City. But if you're alive in 1989, there was a student uprising in Beijing, China. And maybe you remember the students standing there in Tiananmen Square, and the tanks were rolling in. They were going to put down the rebellion. They were going to put down the uprising. And that tank's standing there, and here's a student standing there and just standing there, and a tank is facing him. But he wasn't going to run him over. And so the tank moved over to the right, and the student, he just moved over a little bit too. And then the tank, he moved over to the left, and that student just moved over there and just stood there. Those men inside those tanks were told to run him over. But they wouldn't do it. You know why they wouldn't do it? Because people inside that tank were from Beijing. That's why. They were young folks too. Like that guy standing out there in the middle of the street. So eventually what the Chinese did is they brought in from 4 or 5 miles away. And they put down the rebellion there in Tiananmen Square in Beijing. You see, when you're around people a lot, you have compassion on people, don't you? And here's Jesus, who's been around all these folks all this time. And when it came time for his ministry to begin, he had compassion on them. Compassion that was learned from all those years in a carpenter's shop, that's why. But I think ultimately what benefited Jesus all those years in the carpenter's shop, I don't know what just happened. Did I just lose it back there? There we go. It helped him go to the cross. You ever seen that movie, Passion of the Christ? Come out, I think, 2004. It's been said that in that movie, it was depicted probably the closest ever in any other film or what have you, about really what it was like for the scourging of Jesus Christ. It really illustrated, I think, for us in a visual way, what Isaiah says over in 53 verses 4 and 5 there about being beaten, smitten, afflicted of God, all those things. And it depicted the terrible scourgings and beatings that Jesus went through there. The physical harm that he endured on his way to the cross. Now, oftentimes, we so jump to the cross part of it, and that's true, it's important. But we forget about what happened before he got there. About the trials. About being up all night. And then being beaten, hit. You know, all the things that he had to go through first. The Jews had him first, didn't they? And it says that the Jews, they spat on his face, they beat him, they struck him with the palms of his hands. They plucked out his beard, Isaiah chapter 50, verse 6. Have you ever seen anybody beaten up before? What his face looks like after you've received a beating? Think about that. That's Christ. And when they got through with him, they took him to the Romans. And in the Gospels, they just simply say, well, they scourged him. Well, we might read that and say, oh, That's bad, isn't it? No. Scourging. You know what scourging is? That's where they strip you down. And the Romans would have these whips with bone and metal and whatever in them, and they would stand one on either side of your back, and they would beat you. That's scourging. The Jews had a law about no more than 40 strikes. Folks, the Romans, they could care less what a Jew says. They would stand and beat you until those guys doing the beating wore out. You know why? Because for a Roman, they would rather have you die under the scourging than have to put up the cost of a cross and the nails. And then posting guards there to make sure the family doesn't come, you know, steal the body. Most prisoners died before the cross. Now, why didn't Jesus? Why didn't Christ die before they nailed him to the cross? You know, you see these pictures of Jesus. People try to paint and draw and depict, you know, what he looked like. We don't know what he looked like. Again, Isaiah 53 says he wasn't much to look at. But normally when you see these pictures of Jesus, what's he look like? Does he look effeminate to you? Now, some of I've seen, he looks rather effeminate. Have you ever seen an effeminate-looking carpenter? I hadn't. I see men who work hard, work with their hands, their muscles, and out in bad weather and good weather, hot and cold, they're working. I don't see somebody that, you know, just looks like a, you know, just blow him over with a, you know, with a feather. That's not Christ. And you see these carpenters that work with their hands. There was a show on PBS years ago, I forget the name of it, where the guy, he didn't use any power tools. Everything that he made, what was through manual, you know, labor. He would use, you know, saws and whatever, lathes and what. And his forearms were huge. Remember Mark McGuire? How about Popeye? Remember Popeye? Popeye, yeah. Popeye had big old, you know, he didn't have arms like olive oil. He had big old forearms. I think probably Christ looked more like that than he looked like some effeminate character roaming around not knowing where he's going to sleep that night. What prepared him to go to the cross? Here's the point. All those years in a carpenter shop prepared his body physically that they would make his way and eventually be nailed to that cross. Folks, thanks God that that happened, because he had to go to that cross for you and me. 30 years, whatever it was, he worked in that carpenter shop. Ultimately made him a physical specimen. And then being nailed to that cross. You know, the thing about carpenters is that they can take a discarded piece of wood and make that into something beautiful. I've seen these guys, they'll take old barn siding. And man, they'll use whatever they do use. And the next thing you know, it's just a work of art. Doesn't know what they're doing. You think about our carpenter, Jesus Christ, who can take people that are just discarded, maybe people that others have given up on, and change them to something so much better. You think about Peter, a fisherman. We don't think about Peter the fisherman, do we? We think about Peter the apostle, who stood up in Acts chapter 2 and proclaimed the truth about Jesus Christ. That's who we think about, because Jesus changed him, didn't we? And when we think about the apostle John, what do you think of? Oh, I think of the apostle of love, don't you? That's the same guy on one occasion, and him and his brother wanted to call down fire from heaven to burn up a town because they did not receive Jesus as they thought they should have received him. And then Paul. Oh, Christ took Paul, changed him completely, didn't he? And so when we think about Paul, we don't think about Paul, the prosecutor, the persecutor. We think about Paul, the preacher. That's what Christ does. And I know people today that just a few years ago, others had given up on. But Jesus didn't. I know people that were involved in terrible things in their lives that have come out of that and been changed and made so much better because a carpenter says, let me have you and let me see what I can do with you. And so when we think about Jesus Christ, the Son of God, the Lord of Lords, the King of Kings. Think also about Jesus Christ, the carpenter's son, and what that should mean to us. Has Christ changed your life? No, Christ changed the world. The question is, has he changed you? And if he hasn't, then we'd urge you to consider your situation this evening. Come forward, repent of your sins, confess Jesus as the Son of God, be buried in baptism for remission of sins. We can help you in any way. Make that known to us now as we stand and we sing this song.